What do we do when we find ourselves up against the many leadership challenges that exist within our chosen careers? We all have goals and achievements that we would like to accomplish. Unfortunately, these desires don't come equipped with insight or awareness on how to bring these accomplishments to light. In essence, this is why the Dream Octane Niche Finder Framework was formed. Our founder, Clifton C. Manning, spent the first 17 of his 20-year career in healthcare working with physicians and healthcare leaders to achieve patient-centric goals while possessing only an associate's degree in applied science. At times, these challenges were daunting, and he felt unqualified to achieve the success he wanted. However, he focused on becoming intentional in reading every leadership book that he could find, as well as attending frequent seminars in areas where he saw opportunities to improve. Over time, as he applied insights gained from these various sources, he was able to successfully and efficiently cross the hurdles he found himself up against. Eventually, varying degrees of success within his sphere of leadership influence became more evident. The Niche Finder podcast is intended to bring similar insight to you, the listener, from those who have achieved some level of noteworthy success in their chosen career. Our hope is that the challenges they have overcome in the past will provide insight for your current leadership struggles and unlock the dream of achieving success in your own career. We believe that if innovative change is an engine, your unique dreams and abilities could be its fuel. And now I present to you the host of the Niche Finder podcast, Clifton C. Manning.
Well, I want to welcome you to this version of the Niche Finder podcast. We are privileged to have Kieran Therakin on our show today. He is the author of the 7 Essential Stories Charismatic Leaders Tell. And he has had quite his journey. And I would love for you to, I just want to get out the way and get him to tell one of these charismatic stories to get our audience engaged. So without further ado, let me introduce you to Kieran Therakin. Welcome to the program.
Clifton, thanks for having me on your show. I've been out to Pennsylvania, actually. Reading, Pennsylvania. Years
already.
Yeah. I enjoyed the country, though.
Well, you know, Pennsylvania is pretty big, man. You can drive five hours and still be in Pennsylvania. But it's all good. Yeah. I more associate myself, although I live in PA, I more associate myself with Jersey, possibly even New York, but because that's kind of where I spent majority of my life. But yeah. For the most part, I love it up here, man. I love the landscape. I love every season having something beautiful to look at, and it's awe-inspiring. But I appreciate the compliments.
I've been to Jersey and New York as well. My family lives out in New York, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my cool. Sister.
So to get right into the interview now, why would the audience have a vested interest in your journey?
It's not so much a vested interest in my journey. It is about the learnings of the journey. And, you know, I often think, what would I have told my 20-year-old self? And there are so many things that you would tell your 20-year-old self if you could do that, right? Whether your 20-year-old self is wise enough to listen to that is a different story. But this idea that, you know, life is part of a series of learnings and, you know, stubbing your toe and hurting your head against rocks, and coming out, despite all of that, but because you've been hurt in the process, because you've gained a little in the process, you are wiser as a result of it. And so the journey itself, you know, there's been so many realizations. And I would suspect, you know, like despite anything to do with strategy and things like that, one of the core things I would tell my 20-year-old self is this, and that is everything is going to be okay. And so instead of, you know, desperately trying to get ahead and, you know, strategize and do all these different tactics and learning at a crazy pace and all that kind of stuff, you know, relax. Enjoy that particular moment, those series of tenures, you know, whether that be in university or whether you in that first job and things like that. And don't be so desperate to get out of there to the next step. Because you know what? Everything's going to be okay.
I love that. You know, Malcolm Gladwell in his book Outliers, he actually has a very simple quote that says, hard work is a prison sentence only when it doesn't have meaning. And so what I hear you saying is that you, whatever you're doing, enjoy the process, man.
Enjoy the process.
Valuable in that. Now, let me ask you this. What type of internal struggles at the start of your journey did you find yourself up against?
The primary struggle, I think, and it probably still is there a little. I don't know how it can't be, because you're programmed with these senses of inadequacy. And that's programmed in, you know, a big part of that is societal, cultural, that you have to become something in order to be something. Instead of just being something and becoming something as a result of this growth internally, and you get more and more confident in who you are, more comfortable in your skin, more comfortable in your ability to deliver value just the way you are without having to become something first, then that is, you know, that's the core of a stable presence in your progress. Everything that a good chunk of the things that I have stumbled over is by overreaching beyond what my comfort levels have been, you know, and what my confidence levels have been, and my identity. Your world is a perfect reflection of your self-identity. And those belief systems, those values, those overall perspectives that you have about you and your place in the world and your contributions to it. And it's a perfect reflection of that. And so if you take a look at anything in front of you, it's there because you placed it there. And if I take a look at it but now, Cliff, you know, I go back, you know, I'd be actually, I think, quite proud of myself to see what I've done now at the age of 20. But today, you know, in my late 50s, I look at it as just part of the assumptions. You know, this is just, you know, well, of course it's like this. And I've got my place, you know, I've got a job I like, and, you know, and I've got partners I enjoy working with and all those kind of things. But in my 20s, I wouldn't have believed this. But in my late 50s, I would say, you know what, this just sort of happened because it was a natural progression.
You know, Winston Churchill says that success consists of going from failure to failure without losing enthusiasm. At the start of your journey, what type of roadblocks did you find yourself up against?
The primary roadblocks, I think, you know, coming out of, I did a business degree in university. And unlike an engineering degree or a medical degree or even a legal degree, that kind of thing, they prepare you for a profession. Business degree, what am I going to do with this? I have no idea what I'm going to do with this. And so the blocks were internal blocks, you know, the mental blocks about, you know, where am I going to find my place? How am I going to get ahead? You know, what value could I possibly deliver to this world with this four-year degree that I don't even know what it is that what I learned in that 4 years? Now, I learned a lot of stuff. Primarily not necessarily facts and things like that, but a way of thinking. I didn't know that at the time, right? And of course, it wasn't tested or proven or anything like that, but, you know, it did prepare me to a certain level. But it was this lack of confidence that you could actually step out into the world and deliver value and get ahead as a result.
Did you have a mentor along the way?
You know, this is an amazing little story. Mentors. I had many, many friends of mine that were significantly older, 15 years older, 20 years older, things like that. And they were mentors in their own way. And one of them was an exceptional mentor. And he was an expert in the industry that I was in and such. And he really brought me along as his young protege, you know, in the business that we're in. I keep in touch with him to this day. And he's in his mid-70s now, right? We still keep in touch with him. And, you know, very much he was like a father figure to me that way. And he really watched out for me. What I find, though, is that while a lot of people were older than me and had more business experience and things like that, other than him, and his name was Gary, other than him, they were very poor mentors. They're good friends, but poor mentors, because they could not give me a specific path to follow, a set of principles to follow, belief systems to ingrain in myself. And I mentor more than a few people today. And I will tell you that the mentorship that I give them is not on anything that I don't have deep understanding of. So I don't mentor them in how to fix automobiles. I have no clue what I'm talking about there. But when it comes to the mindsets you need for entrepreneurship, the belief systems that you need to build companies, to build your life within those companies, those kind of things, I have a somewhat of a good idea what that's about. And I'm able to transfer those kinds of skills, beliefs, and identities to these young entrepreneurs.
So tell me, what type of goals did you have at the start of your journey? And do you feel like you fulfilled it, you know, from where you started to where you are today? Do you think that you actually accomplished what you set out to do?
Yeah, I had some very naive goals when I started. And the naivety of that has to do with they were all financially related, you know, so to earn so much money, to put away so much money, those kinds of things. And I didn't realize how meaningless that was. Now, you have to have a certain amount of money to live, a certain amount of money to put away in order to secure your old age and that kind of stuff to fulfill your lifestyle, right? But after a certain point, money becomes quite meaningless. And, you know, today, like, if you had asked me in my 20s whether I would want to be a billionaire, I would have said, yeah, absolutely. Today, I have no desire to do that. You know, like, the notoriety of it, and you just, there's all sorts of negative aspects to that. I wouldn't even know what to do with that level of money, which may sound odd. I just saw a Forbes, survey. You know, the vast majority of people don't want to be billionaires, but they do want to be able to fund a lifestyle that is fulfilling to them, that's comfortable to them, that has abundance and wealth to them, right? But that doesn't necessarily have to be a specific billion-dollar amount. So I'm more interested now in, you know, I certainly don't want to go back into poverty, as you know, as a young university student or anything like that. But I'm much more interested in having an abundant lifestyle, a wealthy lifestyle, but building companies in the process.
So that's what I consider to be your journey. Now, when we talk about your niche, what do you do that feels purposeful?
The things that I feel gives me purpose is actually transferring my knowledge, maybe a little bit of my money into these companies so that I can see them grow. And when I say a company grows, you know, a company grows as a result of their people growing. And a people grow based on their ability to deliver value to their clients. And as a result, the company grows. And so you have to be able to deliver value and abundance and growth opportunities to all those constituents. You know, the people, your clients, your business partners, you know, the supply, your business, all that kind of stuff. They all have to participate in the same way. If one of them is taking while the other one is being stolen from, those ecosystems are not long for the world.
What do you do that you're passionate about? Like, what do you do that when you do it, you feel like I was ignited by this moment?
I love speaking in front of crowds. I absolutely love teaching. I love speaking in front of crowds, and I love giving people strategies and tactics and insights and knowledge that they can deploy that afternoon to create value immediately. And there's so many things that, you know, are like coming from my marketing sales and marketing world. There's so many fast action tactics that are flash in the pan. But there's some really great things that once you install them, they can basically act as a flywheel. And the flywheels allow you to create that momentum, keep that momentum, and build that momentum in your organization. And one of the most perfect flywheels is to find your story. Find that deep, resonant narrative that details your place in this ecosystem, in the world, and how you create value for a specific group of clients and how they will be transformed as a result of the process of creating that value. That's the very first thing you sell. That is the absolute very first thing you sell. Your products and services are simply the tools that people use to facilitate that transformation. So unless they buy that story to begin with, they won't buy anything else.
What do you do that when you do it, it really feels like a pattern of yours? So pattern is what you do naturally well. What do you find that's a pattern of yours?
There's probably more than one thing. if you ask my business partners, I've got two business partners in the digital marketing agency, and I once said, you know, I don't know if you've noticed, guys, but I like to tell stories, and they said, really? They're joking, they're kidding, but there's a point there, a little sarcasm there, really?
Yes, sir.
And so
yes, sir.
This, I believe in this so much that the power of story to transform any situation. Because the very first thing anybody buys, and this doesn't even have to be about a Prada bag, you know, or a trip to Disneyland. This can be about movements, absolute movements. You know, the vaccination movement in the 1700s, Edward Jenner, began with a story. You know, he had to sell the story to the establishment of the age, the medicine establishment, medical establishment, which ridiculed him and, you know, were against him until the story took root. And now vaccination, right up to the probably 2020, when you've got anti-vaccine crowds now as well, right? But vaccination, you know, even in the 20th century, things like for smallpox, for example, smallpox is what Edward Jenner vaccinated against. Smallpox killed 300 million people in the 20th century alone. In the 20th century, from 1900 to about 1980, 300 million people. And finally, vaccination took full root. And the last, it was declared fully eradicated by the World Health Organization, I believe, in 1980. But it began with a story.
That's beautiful. John Maxwell said in his book, Find Your Purpose, the difference between success and significance is success is when you add value to yourself. Significance is when you add value to others. With that being said, what do you do that you find is proficient, but it also is beneficial to someone else?
Can you expand on that question a little? I want to make sure I understand your intent with that question.
Yeah, so I'll reframe it, right? So where patterns are what we do, we do naturally well. Proficiencies is what we learn to do well over time. What do you do well? What have you learned to do well over time, but it also has been beneficial to those who you're doing it for?
I've learned to be a better people person over time. You know, I've always been a great salesperson. Always. Okay. You know, from grade six on, I remember a grade six teacher telling me, "You're a good salesperson." He was watching me in action in some event or something like that. And I'm 11 years old, right? So I've always been a great salesperson. But I think the last, and this is surprising, okay, because I would not have believed this to be as possible if you told me 20 years ago. So in my mid-50s, I really started to get an understanding of this idea of being able to truly listen to people and to get understanding of what motivates them and what the real issues are and all these kinds of things, instead of me just flying off the handle and getting angry. Yeah. And, you know, and up until probably a couple of years ago, there'd be more than one thing that would trigger me. It doesn't happen often, but that trigger event when you are going to deep psychic wounds, you know, that have perhaps not healed, that were there, present from a very early age, you know, growing up with your family, with whatever happened to you, right? When those wounds don't heal, you know, that's what triggers these outrageous rage moments. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that doesn't happen often with me, but when it did, it was always very embarrassing in the outcome. Mm-hmm. It's always very embarrassing in the outcome. And so in the last 3-4 years, so the proficiency, if you're thinking about it, I will start my day on a regular basis now with some form of exercise and without fail, 20 to 30 minutes of meditation. And it's not a traditional meditation where I zero out my mind. You're talking about proficiency, right? So I've had to learn this. And it's not a traditional meditation where I zero out my mind because I can't do that. It's very difficult for me. I might do it for microseconds, you know, where it goes to zero. But, you know, it's about focusing that mind, the constant chatter, into one particular focus area. And then I will go through a series of things. And so the very first thing is to zero state the mind, even for a brief moment. And it might be even smelling that cup of coffee in the morning and just really getting to the sensory feel, the warmth of the cup and the smell and the aroma of the coffee. And you zone into that point. Once I'm able to do that, you've got control of your mind. Then we go into probably at least 10 minutes of gratitude. And it's about anything and everything that you are thankful for at that moment. And if you don't find, and what I tell people, if you don't have anything to be thankful for, first of all, you're thinking about it wrong. Be thankful for what you don't have that you don't want. Be thankful for what you don't have. So, you know, if you you don't have a disease, which must imply that you have health. Right? So people, you have to train the mind to think of things in a positive way. And the final thing is I will actually visualize what I want to create. And the ultimate thing about that is you visualize it in a sense of what that imagery looks like. But it's more important to really, truly feel the imagery in your body. Full sensory. What does it look like? What does it feel like? What does it taste like? What does it absolutely, in an immersive sense, allow you to engage that imagery as if you were there right then and there? And between those three things, you know, life kind of works out, shockingly enough.
You know, Einstein says, you can't solve a problem at the same level at which it was created. The last question I ask you in the niche section is, what problems do people come to you to solve in a unique way?
Well, people come to me to solve their sales and marketing problems. That's what they come to me for, okay? But they actually don't have sales and marketing problems yet. They think they do. What they really have, when we think about it, they really have problems with having a unique value proposition in their product, in their service. It looks like every other boring product, every other boring service. There's nothing unique about it. And so that's the very first thing you have to cure. You have to cure what you are delivering in the way of value to this world. Okay, whatever that product is, whatever that service, how do you create value for the person that buys that product or service? And how is that differentiated from anything else that they can buy, either competitively or on a substitute base or whatever it is, right? That's where it starts. Second thing you've got to do is you've got to absolutely nail down the key messages, the value propositions have to translate to key messages that go into strategic narratives that you can communicate now that value proposition's ability to transform your prospect's life, and that you can communicate that narrative, that story, and install it in your prospect's head in a believable energy, high energy way. And so now you've got a story doing all the heavy lifting of persuasion for you. And so once the prospect is so immersed in that story, at that point in time, they're convincing themselves. And then we can go into, try these sales tactics, those marketing tactics, all those kinds of things. And this is the same problem whether you're selling a Gucci bag or some Prada leather outfit, as the World Health Organization has for the eradication of some disease. It's the same thing. You know, they have to convince people to do certain courses of action. They have to convince funding organizations to bring their resources to bear. It's the same thing. So we start with that value proposition, that promise of transformation in the story, and then the methods for transmitting that story into the hearts and minds of not only your believers, but everybody else that can propel that transformation forward.
That's insightful stuff. So that's the section that I consider to be your niche. Now what I want to get from you in these last few moments is, you know, I want to get your secrets. And the way we define the secrets are those things that you would share with your younger self that you wish you knew back then, but it's something that could actually add value to your journey to get you to where you are today. So the very first question that I have for you is, what one secret would you share with your pre-niche self that will help accelerate them from where they are at that moment in time to where you are today?
There are so many, you know, and they're principle based. Okay. It's in my 20s, I'd be looking for strategies and tactics and things like that. But these are principle based types of things. And ultimately today on a business basis, it would be the power of understanding the story that is going to be so resonant to your to the people you're trying to create value for so resonant that they are completely immersed in the transformative power of that story. I remember looking at the Sears Roebuck, Sears catalog as a kid, right? And going through the toys section. And, you know, just looking at that section on November and December and thinking about all the things I would do with that walkie-talkie. And all that, right? That's the power of story. And it's just a describing a set of walkie-talkies. And there's a little description. But now my little 8-year-old self is just creating all the stories around what that transformation promise is. I'm not even calling it transformation promise. You know what I'm calling it? A lot of fun. That's what I'm calling it. Right? Right. But that's the transformation story for me as an 8-year-old. So if I were to say anything to my 20-year-old self, okay, is that you have to have such a deep understanding of the people in front of you, because it's not about you. It's not about you. It's about your ability to create value for that audience and how to transform them. And at the core of that, I had a great line, and I say this to my young staff on a regular basis, and that is Oprah Winfrey. And this absolutely blew me away when I first heard it. Is that, you know, regardless of who she had as a guest on her show, no matter how big a celebrity and star they were, when the show went to break, they'd always ask her, "How am I doing? How am I doing? Is this okay?" And what she realized at the end, with all of these instances, over celebrity after celebrity after celebrity, was that everybody wants just three things: to be seen, to be heard, and to be understood. And so when I tell my staff, you know, when they're dealing with their clients, when they're dealing with their customers, all these kind of things, right? Be sure that you let them know that you have seen them, that you have heard them, and that you understand their current situation, their perspective, where they are today and where they want to get to. And it's only when you are able to communicate those three things that you are able to gain their trust and then start that transformation journey.
What must-have do you have to getting started and staying committed?
It's got to be about motivation. You know, what is that motive? And I'll tell you, the motive, it can't be about making a lot of money. That is only a means to the real motive. And if that motive is about repairing your sense of self-identity, you can do that right now. Okay, the money won't do that for you. It won't. You know, you're a lonely person today. You're going to be a lonely person, you know, with another $1 million in your bank account, right? Because that kind of hole in your psyche, in yourself, in your soul, cannot be repaired by something as superficial, as shallow as money. It's got to be done in a way that you can do it without, you know, external resources like that. You do it because you are whole unto yourself. And so once you do that, though, then you have to understand what those real motives are. And the ultimate motive for me at this point, and this is the kind of people I'm attracted to as well, is how they're going to transform other people's lives. And so when I take a look at our digital marketing agency, it's a company called Socialite Communications, you know, and I've told you, I'm the senior partner because I'm 20 years older than everybody else. But I'm 30 years older, 35 years older than some of my youngest staff. And, you know, I feel such a deep moral obligation to building a business, building a company that they can stay with, that they can grow with, that they can be fulfilled with. And it's only when you are, Tony Robbins says this, you know, the only time you are ever unhappy in your life is when you're not growing. That's the only time you're unhappy in your life, is when you're not growing. So we want to be able to create those opportunities for all these staff, right? And it's well beyond the paycheck that they are getting, well beyond that. The paycheck's got to be there. But you got to be able to grow them as people in a spiritual sense, in an emotional sense, in a mental sense, right? Strategies, tactics, you know, get them to expand their minds. You know, a mind once expanded by a new idea never regains its original dimensions, right? Oliver Wendell Holmes. Yes, I think that was senior. I think it's all around Google Home Senior, right?
Yes, it is.
And, you know, we want to install those kinds of things. That would be the thing that would make me the most proud. I want to have this company blow the, you know, not shoot the lights out. Absolutely. But it's got to be in the trail of people and their commitment, not commitment, their recognition that, wow, that was a great place to be at. And I remember, I told you about Gary earlier, right? One of my first mentors. And I still keep in touch with him today. I haven't been at that firm since 1994. So that's a long time. That's, you know, over 30 years. Well, pretty close to 30 years now. Yeah. And one of the things I say to him, and I started with him when I was 24 years old, and I left when I was like 30, 31. And I regularly said to Gary that was one of the best cultures I have ever been in, but I was too young to know it at the time.
Wow.
You know, and that is the absolute utter truth. And that is something that, you know, he just did as a natural extension of who he was as a person, right? He and his partners. And that's the same kind of thing I want to build at Socialite.
Mm. You know, Les Brown said, in order to do something you've never done, you've got to be someone you've never been.
Yeah, it's identity.
And so it's identity. And so I appreciate you giving voice to that. Last question that I have for you is, how do you know when it's time to change course versus staying focused on your goal?
It's not working.
That's
this,
it.
Anything you're supposed to... So I give this analogy to my... So in my consulting practice, I've coached hundreds of entrepreneurs over the last 20 years. Hundreds. Been in lots of boardrooms, lots of, you know, startup companies, things like that. And the analogy I give them is that whatever you're supposed to doing will rebound that energy tenfold to you. Okay? It certainly won't take energy from you. Maybe it's only fivefold, right? But you are getting more energy out of it than you put in. I'll give you an example. So years ago, in my 30s, I took up skiing. And I fell and I, you know, almost hurt myself a few times. Never broke anything. But I enjoyed it. You know, and it was fun and it was enjoyable. So you keep getting up, and you're getting better, and you're getting better, and you keep getting up, right? You're still falling, but you're falling in a different way now. You're falling doing different things, right? And you are making that progress. But everywhere along the way, you are getting more energy than what you're putting into it, because the enjoyment, that sense of exhilaration, that sense of joy is what delivers that sense of fulfillment that you are on the right path. And that should be in anything that you're doing, whether that be relationships, whether that be a career, whether that be your education. If you're on the right path, you will find that exhilaration and that joy. It's not external. It comes internal. Anything external, if you're getting that exhilaration from something external, that's not as clear to you or as resonant as if that joy is coming from you internally. Because you are on a path of fulfillment, of purpose, of mission. That's what you want to do.
Mm. If someone wanted to get in contact with you, how would they best do that?
Well, the simplest thing to do is come to my website at strategypeak.com. I'm on LinkedIn. And you can go to Amazon and pick up a copy of the book. And the book I wrote was called The 7 Essential Stories Charismatic Leaders Tell. So that's on Amazon right now, and it's not very expensive. I think it's $3.49 for the Kindle version.
All right. I love it. And you know what? If for those who want to get in contact with us, you can always go on to dreamoctane.org. That's dreamoctane.org. For we believe that if innovative change is an engine, your unique dream and ability could be its fuel. We want to thank our special guest for being on the show, coming all the way from Canada. We want to thank Kerrion Therakin for being on our show today, and it was such a privilege. I mean, a lot of insightful, well thought out, yet concise responses. I appreciated the information that you had to share, and look forward to hearing how people who hear this program reach out to you and give you feedback on what they felt when they listened to the episode. So I appreciate
that. I will definitely do that. Clifton, thank you for having me on your show.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. And Niche Finder community, we look forward to having the very next guest who can help you on your journey towards success. Thanks again.